Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. This hockey season, you can view over 70 vehicles in their warm showroom. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport.
Let's say hello to Derek Wills, back home safe and sound after four games on the road. Pat Steinberg and Ryan Pinder back here at Ski Cellar. We're here at the 5809 McLeod Trail South location until 6 o'clock. It's time for our daily Calgary Flames roundtable. And gentlemen, for the last four games, the Flames have scored 21 goals, including 18 in a trio of wins. The line combinations have been back to what we were used to earlier in the season. Elias Lindholm is back on the right wing with Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan. Michael Backlund is back with Matthew Tkachuk. They've got Andrew Mangiapane playing with them as well. They score a lot of goals on that road trip with those lines, Derek. I'm curious as to where you see this. We had seen Lindholm at center for a long time. We'd seen Backlund and Tkachuk split apart for a long time. Do you have a feel one way or the other as to what way this team stacks up best as and how these lines are best put together?
Well, I mean, when you look at the road trip and all the goals, and it's crazy, in the first 55 games this season, the Flames didn't score more than five goals in regulation time once, and now they have done it in three of their last four games. So I think having a little bit of stability in the lines has probably helped guys feel a little bit more comfortable and maybe develop a bit of timing and chemistry together. So this is what Jeff Ward has really wanted for a long time, is to be able to leave his lines and pairings together. So I think it's good that he was able to do that, at least for most of the road trip. But, you know, a couple of interesting things have happened. The Flames got a lot of scoring from their bottom nine, and certainly their bottom six stepped up big time on the road trip, and they were getting a lot of points from their depth guys. And Mark Jankowski finding his game, I think, gives them some more flexibility, because he was a guy who's in and out of the lineup. But since snapping a 38-game goal streak to start the season, he scored five goals in seven games. And all of a sudden, he's looking like the guy who was their third-line center for most of last season and can be dangerous offensively and still pretty good defensively. So with him playing well as your fourth-line center, I think it allows you to leave Elias Lindholm on right wing. The thing about Lindholm, he's arguably your best right winger and your best center. So I still like the stack potentially moving forward. If they can add a top six right winger of going Elias Lindholm, Sean Monahan, Michael Backlund, Derek Ryan. But with the way Mark Jankowski's playing, maybe it changes your thinking as far as that's concerned. So I think leaving these lines together, at least to start this homestand, would be a good idea for Jeff Ward. But again, as we've seen before, he's got a pretty quick trigger finger. If he doesn't like something he sees in the first period of a game, then we could be back to square one again.
Yeah, and it's the exact same lines that really didn't do a ton for Jeff Ward when he was under 500 through 27 games to start the year. One thing that we talked about
earlier.
Peters.
Sorry, not to correct you.
That's important. That's the wrong name. One thing that we talked about earlier, Wilsey, that I think has to be made real clear, and I think you'd agree, is that whatever has got Johnny Gaudreau going elite offensive producer has to be kept as a very serious first look. That wasn't Lindholm earlier this year. That is Lindholm now. So I get if they stay together, because it's a different team when you've got, elite Johnny Gaudreau versus middling defensively suspect Johnny Gaudreau with no offense. So, look, it's kind of the same as the what do we expect from the Flames question. Like, it's a bit of a fool's errand to try to guess the lines moving forward. But
right,
they've worked of late, albeit against, what, one playoff opponent in their last six games. But as Derek said, if it doesn't look good through 20, you don't think Jeff Ward's going to hesitate to switch him back. They've got multiple looks. And for the mediocre results that they've had this year, that was one critique we had last year of Bill Peters, was that they really didn't have another shape to shift into if plan A didn't work. Now, plan A this season hasn't gone as well as plan A last year, but there's different looks, and we've seen different compositions for the forward group, and that flexibility is an asset.
First of all, I'm with you on that front, and I'm really happy that they gave it a run. And even if it never goes back to Lindholm playing center this season, I mean, guys, they did it for, what, more than 2 months, essentially, he was playing center, going back to November when Jeff Ward took over. So it's basically been 2.5 months that Lindholm's been playing center. So we saw it. We know that it works. We know that he, as you said, Derek, is probably this team's best center, as on top of being this team's best right winger. My belief is this team is the most difficult to match up against in a playoff series with Lindholm at center and with that stack that you talked about. But I also think there's something to be said about what Ryan's talking about and getting Johnny Gaudreau going. And if you can, doesn't matter what, how you stack up against in the playoffs if you can't get there. And there's a much better chance of them getting there if Monahan and Gaudreau are playing better and contributing offensively like we know they can. And they went to Jeff Ward, as the coach told us yesterday. They went to Jeff Ward, and it sure does sound like they said, we'd like to have Lindholm back on our right wing. Backlund went to Jeff Ward, said that I'd like to be at center. That's kind of what you're reading between the lines in terms of what happened. So the other point that I think is really important, and you kind of talked about it with Jankowski, it's also a whole lot easier to have Lindholm on the right side if you've got Backlund being a true two-way factor. As opposed to being strong defensively and good in a shutdown role, we've also seen him make an impact at the other end of the ice on the offensive side of things, and that's important and probably allows you to move Lindholm over to the right a little easier too. So if they were to stick with this for the next little while, I understand it, because you probably want to have your guys feeling good and get some offensive confidence going and all that type of stuff. But I do think it was important to see what you had over a long stretch of time with Lindholm at center. And I still believe they're the hardest to match up against when Lindholm's playing down the middle.
Yeah, and one thing I'm not sure I need to see again for a while, if ever, is Michael Backlund on the wing.
I'm with you there.
He's clearly more comfortable at center. And he started to play like a legitimate top-end two-way guy. Remember, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago, he finished fourth in Selke Trophy voting? He's been playing like that of late. And Johnny Gaudreau, to the point that you guys made, looked a lot more engaged to me on that four-game road trip. And that's despite the fact that he couldn't seem to score on a breakaway to save his life. But at least he was getting some breakaways and getting those chances. And he just seemed to be doing a better job moving his feet with and without the puck. So, you know, good on him. And I think he would have been a lot more productive offensively on that road trip if Sean Monahan wasn't so snake-bitten. Monahan had a ton of grade-A chances right from the slot, and those chances he normally buries way more often than not, but he was having a hard time finishing during that four-game road trip. So if he starts to finish, then I think, you know, Johnny Gaudreau's numbers are going to get a bump up, and Sean Monahan's and Elias Lindholm's will as well. So we'll see if those guys can start maybe finishing some of what they've started of late. But it's been good to see the group as a whole from top to bottom really start to chip in offensively.
Okay, he's Derek Wills, the radio voice of the Calgary Flames. Pinder and Steinberg along with you, too. This is our daily Calgary Flames roundtable. Cam Talbot coming off an outstanding game in Anaheim last night. First shutout as a member of the Calgary Flames. 44 stops. He's got a .938 save percentage since the beginning of December. The Flames have 23 games remaining this season. What's a good goalie split for you, Derek, in terms of how Riddick and Talbot are deployed down the stretch? And you don't need to give me exact numbers, but just kind of a ballpark for you.
Well, it's tough to predict without like being able to look into a crystal ball and figure out how each guy is going to be playing down the stretch. But in a perfect world where both guys are at or near the top of their game, I'd like to see it pretty close to 50-50, to be honest. I mean, Cam Talbot, statistically speaking, has been the better of the two guys in the last month or two. Now, I'm not saying that David Riddick is playing poorly. He's had some off nights, and Talbot's had one or two of those as well. But you know, Talbot's been pretty darn consistent going back to November. And even before that, when his win-loss record didn't look very good, I think it was in the first 10 games, the Flames scored an average of 1.9 goals per game when he was in net. I mean, it's almost impossible to win in this league if you're not scoring at least two and three on most nights. So, you know, I think that win-loss record was as much, if not more, on the team than it was on Talbot. But, you know, he has certainly been playing better, you know, since the start of November. So, and even going a little further than that, the start of December. But, you know, David Riddick is at least the 1A, if not the clear-cut number one goaltender on this team. But as we've seen with a lot of teams in the league, and you guys were talking about some of the great tandems that are out there where it's pretty close to a 50-50 fit split during the regular season, and then it can change in the playoffs. But I think keeping a guy fresh, especially a guy like Riddick, who's never played more than 45 games in a season, I think it would really be key for the Flames. And they're lucky. They've got a number two or a 1B guy that they can trust in Talbot, so why not give him some more work?
They've only got two back-to-backs left, if I'm correct. They've got the two games, the Islanders-Rangers, and the two Florida teams at the end of the month. That's, pretty much the only spot we would have seen a Cam Talbot start, it seems, in the first 2 months of the year. They almost use him in as a bare minimum type option. And, there was obviously some tentativeness the way the club was playing defensively, maybe some things they saw in practice. Perhaps it was the change of scenery coming from Edmonton, but there was they were very leery to give him considerable work.
Right.
I think those fears should be pretty well dispelled at this juncture, given his play, as you've alluded to, Pat, since December 7. So there's two things. One is, I think you know who your starter of the playoffs is if it was tomorrow, and what does that player need in terms of work versus rest, and you work backwards from there. So even though Jaro Halak had better numbers than Tuukka Rask last year in the regular season, there was not a notion that Halak was going to start the postseason. It was, okay, what do we need to do to get Rask ready to be his best self on, say, April 10 or whenever Toronto-Boston started last year? That would kind of be the thing. Now, careful, because you still need to get in, but I would think it's possible the best way to go about this is to try to get Riddick into form, also get him rest, keep Talbot going because he's playing well, closer to somewhere between a third, two-thirds, and 50-50, with still Riddick playing a little more, unless you feel like he's showing some burnout. I mean, aside from the L.A. game, I mean, that was two really impressive starts ahead of that with Vancouver and San Jose. So you kind of got two guys in good form, but you do have to remember what this season's going to be measured by.
On overtime last night, a bunch of people were talking about this particular topic, and I threw out the number 13 and 10 in the final 23 games of the season. 13 Riddick starts, 10 Talbot starts. That sounds like a nice ballpark to be in. If that were to be the case, Riddick finishes at 55 starts, which is kind of the ballpark number that we all talked about coming into the season, and it lets him rest but still get plenty of work down the stretch. Talbot has played so well for you that if that continues, he's giving you as good, maybe a better chance to win some nights than Riddick is. Let his confidence be as high as you can get it going into the postseason, and then have a good body of work from both guys to choose from, not even to choose from, but to bank on. I think that we're all on the same page that Riddick would be the night one starter right now, and probably once we get to the time, if they're playing in the playoffs, he'd be the night one starter for us then too. But Riddick's never played an NHL playoff game before. He's never started one. He's never been in a playoff series. And so what happens if he gets hurt, or what happens if he falters? If you have plenty of Cam Talbot work down the stretch, I think you feel a whole lot more comfortable and confident going to him if Riddick has a bad game or a couple of bad games, and maybe in some circumstances, I don't know if we can go to Talbot. Well, if he's playing well and you know what you've got, well, maybe you can make that change and go to him a little earlier than otherwise. So all I'm saying is that I think there's plenty of benefit to giving these guys pretty close to, as you said, Derek, a 50-50 split down the stretch. I went 13 Riddick, 10 Talbot starts. That's a nice ballpark for me.
Yeah, I mean, with the position the Flames are in, the bottom line is they have to play the guy who gives them the best chance to win every night, don't they? I mean, you can't say, well, we're going to do this to try to get that guy ready. I think you have to play whoever you think gives you the best chance to win every night. Who's got the hottest hand? And if you want to dig a little deeper than that, and I know that the Flames coaching staff does this, now who's played well in a certain building or against a certain team? I don't think the Flames, because it's hit and miss to make the playoffs with how tight the standings are in the Pacific Division and the Western Conference, can afford to try to force feed a guy a starts if he's not the better of the two goaltenders. Now, if they're both playing well, I think something close to what you said, Pat, 13 and 10, that would be perfect. but they have to both be playing well to go down that road. If they're not, you've got to go with the guy who's playing best, because the Flames just can't afford to leave any points on the table right now.
Okay, well then I'll throw this at you. Standings are tight. All the points are important. You see any chance they use the same goalie Saturday night, Monday afternoon?
Potentially. It's not a back-to-back, but it's, I guess, as close to a back-to-back as you get because of the afternoon start on Family Day. Mm-hmm. But and really, tomorrow's the interesting one for me, because I think tomorrow probably dictates who we see on Monday. But Cam Talbot's coming off a shutout. And historically, whoever, if you get a shutout, you're going to get the next start. But because of the setup and because he's 2-0 against the Ducks and the Ducks are coming in on Monday, I do wonder if that will factor in to the coach's decision on who gets the start against the Blackhawks tomorrow. It might not. And if they do decide to go back to Talbot and he plays well, then I think you can go back to him on Monday. If they go to Riddick tomorrow and he plays well, I think there's a chance he gets both games, although you're obviously quite confident going to Talbot on Monday because he's only given up one goal in two games against the Ducks this season. So we'll see. The good news is I think they feel comfortable going in either direction.
Yeah, and I could easily see them, even with that, if Talbot plays well tomorrow, I could still see them going to Riddick on Monday too, even though Talbot's played well against the Ducks this year. And remember, there's a break in there afterwards. It's a short one, but they play Monday afternoon, then not again till Friday evening. And if they don't get Riddick a start in one of these next two, then he's going to go 9 days between starts. And I don't know if that is an ideal situation. So there's a ton of things that go into this conversation. There's no doubt about it. It's a good spot to be in, and the way that both these goalies have played this year, if you're the Flames, you can be pretty confident whoever you're starting in net is going to give you an opportunity to win on most nights. Derek Wills is with us. He is Ryan Pinder. My name is Pat Steinberg. This is our daily Calgary Flames roundtable. I won't ask anybody to suggest what we might expect coming into this three-game homestand, because what to expect has been a fool's errand. It's very hard to predict what's coming next for the Calgary Flames. However, what we do know, Derek, is that the Flames have been a very good team on the road and have had their struggles in recent times on home ice. In your mind, why has that been over the last number of months?
Well, there's fewer distractions on the road. The schedule is pretty much set in stone every day. You know what you're going to do on a game day.
We're going to have to reconnect. Derek, we can't hear you. Something crackling with your phone, with your
phone's
connection.
Dragging behind the car.
Kleiner, just drop Derek and see if we can fix that connection. And you answer first. We'll try and reconnect with Derek and make that connection a little better.
I'll let Derek pick that up right where he was. I just was looking at it. It's very interesting because the next two games they have, Chicago and Anaheim, Talbot's been great against both of them. The one win over Chicago, Talbot, 30-plus saves, only allowed one goal. Riddick allowed 5 in his start, or at least they lost 5-3, maybe an empty in his start against Chicago. And Talbot's clearly been the better netminder, getting both wins in Anaheim. So I just thought that's a nice little wrinkle to add to the equation of who starts Saturday and Monday. We've got Derek back. Derek, sorry, start again. We just couldn't hear much of what you were saying there.
Yeah, I had to call up on the phone line. I don't know what's going on with the Opal app. Probably Mason's fault. But anywho.
Yep.
I think there's a couple of factors. Number one, when you're on the road, your schedule on a game day is pretty much set in stone. You know what you're going to be doing from the time you get up until the time you go to bed. So I think that structure probably helps them be a little bit more focused on the task at hand. And number two, Jeff Ward has asked them to simplify and to play a more direct style of hockey. I think it's easier to do that and to not try to put on a show for the fans at Scotiabank Saddledome when you're on the road. I think they've just been a little bit greasier on the road and have done a better job getting pucks to the net and getting bodies to the net. When you look at the goals that they scored on the road trip, a lot of them were just kind of simple plays where they got guys in front and screened the goaltenders or scored on second or third or fourth opportunities. And, you know, a lot of the time at home this season, they've kind of been one and done. They get a scoring chance, and if they don't score, then there isn't a second or third or fourth opportunity there for them. So I think those two things, just, you know, kind of getting away from some of the distractions that every team has to deal with at home, and some teams probably deal with better than others, and going on the road and just playing a little simpler style of hockey, I think those two things have helped them.
I don't know, man. It's weird. Derek makes good points, but teams over the course of the history of time are better at home than on the road. So why would it, for this team, be better to be? I don't know. I think it just sort of comes and goes. I think there is something psychologically to the easier to play simple on the road than it is at home, Pat, but we shall see. We know they're going to have to be better on home ice than they've been of late if they want to, A, get to the playoffs, and B, make noise once they're in there. So we'll see. I think sometimes we can attribute a lot of results to things that may or may not exist, and, you know, data's lumpy. It doesn't all, you don't, if you're 500, you don't win one, lose one for the entire season. You have winning runs, you have losing runs, and it's just so happened that they've had more success on the road.
I will, I don't know the reason why it's been better at on the road and better at home. I think part of it is just the fact that, especially with the way this season has gone, and to answer your question as to, you know, why it would be this way for this team and maybe not others, I think part of that could be the fact that because this year was, there were so many expectations on this team coming into the year, and they haven't met those expectations, and they've fallen short of them by a fairly large degree. I think that ramps up a lot of the negative conversation that can exist around a team, and you don't hear that when you're on the road. So I wonder if there's a little bit to that, but there's also one other thing that I know. They're going to need to be a much better team at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome in the last 23 games. They got a good chunk of home games between now and the end of the regular season. And look, if you're going to want to be a formidable group, and if you're going to be a team that strikes fear into whoever you're playing in the postseason, you got to be able to win games at home. So that's one of the more important things for me in the final couple months of the season is, can the Flames establish the Saddle Dome as a much more difficult place to play than they have the last couple of months? What's happening on the road is great, and I don't think that should stop, and I think the simple approach they have there is good. I just think they also need to be better on home ice here in the second half for the final stretch of the season.
Yeah, they absolutely have to be better at Scotiabank Saddle Dome. The funny thing is, you know, kind of to Ryan's point, last season, the Flames were one of the best home teams in the league. And this is pretty much the same team that they had last season. There's been a few changes, but not many. It's the same core group of players. So it's kind of hard to wrap your head around. And, you know, maybe we're digging too deep here. Maybe it's more of a statistical anomaly. Who knows? But what I do know is I talked to Mark Jankowski after the game last night. And I asked him what was going to be key for the Flames going home after a road trip where they pick up six of a possible 8 points. And he talked about carrying the momentum they gained on the road home with them. So we'll see if they can do that. They've got a couple of winnable games against non-playoff teams coming up. And if they can make some hay at home, then they're going to put themselves into a pretty good spot in the Pacific Division. And again, I don't want to keep beating the same drum, but I think, you know, fooling around with a wild card spot in the Western Conference when you've got some teams in the Central Division who I think could be and will be better down the stretch, the Predators and the Jets. I just think you've got to finish top three in the Pacific Division. You don't have to win the division for a second straight season, but finishing even in the 2-3 hole and getting, I think, a more favorable first-round matchup would be good for the Flames. But they're not going to be in that position unless they start to play better at home.
Good stuff, Mr. Wills. We will talk to you on this segment again on Tuesday, but we will see you tomorrow at the Saddle Dome for game day against the Blackhawks. Have a good rest of your Friday, my friend.
Hey, will either one of you guys be my Valentine? Or
I'm spoken for. I can't. Oh. I'm not a free agent. Right. Sorry.
Yeah, I can't help either. This one's on Pat, though.
I have a very nice gift for you that I will bring to you tomorrow.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Oh, happy Valentine's Day, guys.
It's romantic. Bye, Derek.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. This hockey season, you can view over 70 vehicles in their warm showroom. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport.